Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
I'm pretty good. Had a long, drawn-out customer service phone call with Amazon this morning that really kicked my day off with a jolt.
I don't think I realized that Amazon had people who answer the phone.
Sometimes, well, they make it very difficult on the internet to convey to them that a package that has been marked delivered is in fact not delivered. So you do occasionally have to call.
You should be able to like talk to them through your Alexa. That would be kind of cool. Or creepy. One of the two.
I don't have an Alexa and I don't want Amazon in my house.
I have the like very early stages of a cold.
Oh man, well, why didn't you say something? I don't want you getting me sick.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I think podcast lines are immune, so I think you'll be okay. But it's that like going to get worse feeling. Like you're drinking all the teas and you're doing all the stuff, and it kind of is bad now, but you know that you're still on the upslope of this cold.
Can I give you a pro tip? Suck.
Yeah, hit me.
Coldies. This is a relatively new discovery for me. They're little lozenge type things.
Oh yeah, I've had coldies.
I find that they actually nip it in the bud as well as anything.
All right. You know what? I'll give coldies another run. I've had coldies, and I found them to be worthless. But, you know, okay. I'm at the point where I'm pouring apple cider vinegar and tea, so I'll try all sorts of witch doctor remedies. Might as well throw coldies into the mix.
I think you're better off just shooting the apple cider vinegar and then, you know, chasing it with some ginger ale or something.
I could do that too. If you have home remedies
putting
for
it
me,
in
feel
tea,
free to
just
feel free to tweet
out
us.
The torture.
Feel free to tweet us with your home remedies.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Or I could just go the Amish route of God figure it out. And, you know, if I have to have this cold for the rest of my life, so be it.
Isn't that like Rastafarian too? Didn't Bob Marley kind of do that?
I think Rastafarians believe in medicine, but I'm really just talking out my butt there. We're going to talk about out of our butts about all kinds of things today. We're going to do Mute, which contains the aforementioned Amish reference. What else are we going to do? Kind of, sort of. I mean, yes, that's a plot point in Mute. We're going to talk about Love on Netflix. We are going to talk about Good Girls, finally. A few other things on the list over here. But let's get it. Should we start with Mute? Let's do our little Netflix run and then jump over to network TV in a little bit. We watched this at your suggestion. And I did not realize that it was going to be quite such a star-studded affair. I was expecting the Skarsgård.
Right.
But then Paul Rudd pops up a couple scenes in. And Justin Theroux pops up a couple scenes in. But I didn't realize it was Justin Theroux until, I'd say, at least an
much
hour
later.
And 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah. I knew they were all in it because I actually heard an interview with the director. Do you know who the director is?
It's Duncan Jones. The director.
Do you know who he is, though?
No, I just saw his name in the credits.
You don't know who Duncan Jones is?
Was he like one of the monkeys back in the day?
That's Davy Jones. Okay. Did you notice the dedication?
I did not notice the dedication.
Okay.
Oh, he made Moon. I saw Moon. Moon was good.
Yes, but I can't believe you didn't know this. So Duncan Jones, I don't know if I guess you obviously didn't notice. I'm trying to find the other name because yes.
Is he David Bowie's kid? Is that it?
That's right.
Oh.
It's said at the end, dedicated to David Jones and Marion Skeen, who was his nanny.
Oh.
Both of whom passed in the last couple of years. So yes. He made Moon. He also made Warcraft, and unfortunately, I would say Mute belongs in the category more of Warcraft than Moon.
I didn't see Warcraft, but just judging from your tone, I'm going
to... Oh, neither did I. I didn't see Warcraft. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Look, it's fine. It's a fine way to spend 2 hours, and in the Netflix flood the zone of content strategy, it's great. It looks good. It's got people you recognize. Paul Rudd gets to do Paul Rudd things. Skarsgård gets to emote.
Yeah, but weren't
facially
they...
emote.
Didn't you feel like everybody was like a B?
Yes. Yes.
Actors I love, actors I'm excited to see, were like a B, and the story was bad. I was crushingly disappointed, to be totally honest with you. I kept waiting for some hook or something to pop. This is just not a good movie.
It's, there's not a lot that is like particularly compelling.
There's a lot of violence and unpleasantness too. I mean, with the characters and with the actual action of the film, and just like, I'm not sure what is redeeming about this exactly. I'm uncomfortable with the apparent, you know, in finger quotes, happy ending. Like, it's just not good.
There's a lot of casual pedophilia, I feel like, in this movie as well. Like, people are sort of kind of cool with pedophilia. Like, not totally just cool, but sort of kind of cool.
Yeah, and not just that, but like, beyond pedophilia sounds like the worst thing ever, but I just mean
it sounds
outside,
like the worst A&E series of your life,
right? Outside of pedophilia, just like attitudes and treatment of children in general, just like the stuff that happens around them that's like no big deal, just all the stuff involving kids here is uncomfortable at best.
Yeah, that was my big takeaway from the end, was like, man, that kid is gonna be fucked up,
right? Like, it's like, all right, off into the sunset, and it's like, I don't think so, man. That's off into a living nightmare. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're gonna stay with grandma and everything will be fine.
I don't understand. I you know, it's just, Moon is such a deeply thoughtful piece, if you will. It confuses me, Duncan Jones wrote, or at least wrote the story for Moon, which is like I don't know, man. I just don't totally understand what happens to people.
I have a question for you. Why do you think this movie was...
got made?
Well, I know why it got made. You got Paul Rudd and Skarsgård and Justin Theroux.
That's true.
And they're available. Why was this movie set like in the future?
Right. Yeah. Like, what did it change to have weird implants all over the place?
Yeah. Or like, just the sort of like, oh, wow, you can get food delivered by drone. I mean, I guess it highlights the difference between your Amish mute character and...
Yeah, but we don't need to go to the future for that.
Right. Like,
because
there's plenty of that.
Is not actually... Yeah. I kind of thought he was just going to be a guy who chose not to talk because of his religion. But it's more complicated and dumber than that.
Well, and I think the movie sort of takes this, like, pain to sort of reveal, right? You have the opening scene where you can't really tell it's the future, and then all of a sudden he kind of looks out the window, and it's, like, space. But, like, that never, like, flying cars and all that stuff never really matter. I mean, I guess there's some stuff
you
with
know
his, like, handheld devices, but all of that could have been cell phones, and it would have been
completely
just as fine. You know what I mean?
You know what's funny? This makes Altered Carbon really look great.
It actually does. You're right.
like just specifically the fact that, like, okay, if we're gonna just throw some nonsense against the wall in terms of story, like, at least make it look phenomenal and make the future relevant.
Yeah,
which is what Altered Carbon did. So, like, I think maybe the lesson in part is that executing a good sci-fi property is very difficult, and that this is not a good version.
Yeah. Although, and even though I would agree with you that I think the performances were largely B plus, as was the love story, I'd take the mute dialogue over the Alter Carbon dialogue. So if we could maybe just flip flop those writers or something, we'd probably be okay.
I do want to, like, this is one of these things that we'll never really know, but I wonder if, like, that comes in part down to the actors.
It might.
I wonder if just Paul Rudd and Justin Theroux took some...
Sell the material.
Artistic liberties and sell the material better. And, you know, Kinnaman is a little more wooden.
Mute has a lot less techno babble in general.
That's true. Say. They waste the... Because of exactly the thing we're talking about with not really using the future, they waste a lot less time trying to explain the future to us.
And, like, even the limey characters in Mute, you know what I mean? That's their term for them. I'm not slagging the English or anything.
No, go ahead. Like, through the English.
They're, you know...
Colonizers.
That's right. You know, they're pretty cardboard, one-and-a-half-dimensional sort of characters.
Yes.
But they pop off the screen way more than any of the cardboard one-dimensional characters in Alter Carbon.
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun and funny.
Like, so I, you know, I don't know. I sound like I'm advocating for Mute, but at least Alter Carbon looks good. You know what I mean?
Right. And again, it's just, I think part of the thing is, yes, Mute executes on a micro level, the dialogue and scenes a little better at times than Altered Carbon, but it's also like that sort of project more. And since it sort of puts an onus on its own ability to tell a story more, the fact that it sort of fails is it stands out more.
Yeah.
Whereas in Altered Carbon, it was easier to just enjoy it as a visual explosion. Whereas Mute, it's like the only way to enjoy it is with the story and the words and the acting, and none of it is quite up to snuff.
You know what? That's fair. You definitely say a lot of it is not up to snuff.
And again, these are people I love.
Yes.
So it's not like I'm dissing the people. It's just this movie did not come together.
Can we talk about some more people I love things I love?
We could go so many directions with this. I have so many. This was the thing I was least excited to talk about. The rest of the stuff, I got thoughts, man.
All right. Some people I love doing a show I love that is called Love.
Okay.
On Netflix, I think is where we'll go next.
Okay.
Season 3 debuted this week.
Yes.
How far did you get in this thing?
Just two.
I'm 7 episodes in.
Wow.
And
so I literally at 11:30 p.m. last night sat down still having to watch 2 episodes of Love, 2 episodes of Sneaky Pete, and 1 episode of Good Girls. So I was rushing, or I would have watched more Love and more Sneaky Pete. We'll get to Sneaky Pete in a minute. But I think the second episode also very good. I thought the first episode of the third season of Love might have been my favorite of the entire series.
Oh, wow.
We know these characters a little better now, you know, down to Randy and Birdie. Like, the relationship is a little more established, and for them to take this sort of almost bottle episode trip to not Palm Springs, I just thought the characters are all so full and funny now. Like, I thought it was hilarious, and I think the music is like has kicked it up a notch this year.
Yeah, I
think the music on this show is at a peak level right now, and it's obviously a totally different style of, you know, show versus film. But I felt like, especially in that first episode, it was almost Baby Driver-ish the way the music mixed and moved the show along. And the way they did the whole Scrubs bit where Randy's singing Scrubs and then it comes on when they're like, there's just this is like peak Apatow and great comedic storytelling. It's firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, and look, this is a show that is not. This is not Golden Age television. You know, they're not trying to make The Sopranos.
No, and they're not trying to. They're not. It's not a sitcom either.
Right, but in that world of things like Crashing.
Yep.
Or I mean, it's not even as high-minded as some of the Louis C.K. stuff in terms of
not at all, or not even as high-minded as Master of None.
Yeah,
it's just a narrative comedy, but it's one of the best ever.
And I can't totally tell if it's because it's this thing is sort of like targeted straight for our pleasure centers. You know what I mean? Like it's our era of music. It's sort of our age people.
But I think it's also Judd Apatow. Playing his hits in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, his daughter
she's excellent.
She's getting really good.
Oh my God, she's excellent.
He's been putting her in stuff for a while, and it was one of those things where you're like, I'm a little uncomfortable with this, but you're like, wow, she can really act now.
Yeah, and when she was in stuff before, a lot of it was just like, the job was be cute, and
right.
She was perfectly good at that, like most children are. But this season, she has a different level of acting to do, and she's killing it.
Yeah.
She's killing it. And Paul Rust, there's something about that guy, man, because he's not nice to look at, and he's got a weird voice, and he's incredibly awkward, but he's also endearing. And, you know...
Well, I think that's the thing that
I could fill books with my love for... I always forget which Gillian she is, but Jacobs, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that they're engaging and winning. They're all both of them, I think, in the show. They're also kind of dicks. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's
dicks. Yeah.
That's what's
he's
great about
dick.
It.
He's a dick a little bit like Chidi in The Good Place is a dick, where like just get it together, man.
Yeah.
Like you're killing us over here. And she's just a dick.
Yeah, she's a. You know, it's funny, and there's been some stuff written about this, and I'm sorry for bringing up The Bachelor, but maybe you heard about some of the stuff that went down on this season of The Bachelor. A lot of people.
I did only because John Oliver played a clip from like CNN where some dude breathlessly explained the whole thing.
It is pretty. It does invite some breathless explanation, but there's a lot of talk about this guy who. You know, he picked one girl and then he changed his mind and then
who
went
does
back and
that?
And then went well, it's the second time it's happened on the show, actually.
Oh my God.
But he went
this
back
show and, is such a this show it, like it's the worst.
I think we'll talk about this more when we talk about Unreal next week a little bit. But
okay.
So the guy goes back and then dumps the girl that he had selected previously. To get back with the girl that he had dumped on the show prior.
And did that girl take him back?
She did. She did.
That's
yes.
If, man, she if did. You dump me on TV, it's over. For
they
me.
Are they are currently engaged.
You hear me,
as
ladies?
As we speak.
That is a hard and fast rule. You dump me on national television, it's over forever.
Yeah. So he compounded his dumping on national television by going to this girl's house, or actually, I should say house. It's an Airbnb that they had. They set up for the two of them, you know, like, because you win the show, and there's a couple months before you can be a couple in public, right? So they...
Yeah, yeah, he, like, made her cry a lot on TV, but where is this going?
So 12 minutes unedited. But anyway, there's been a lot written about how he is that guy, right? Where he's doing this terrible thing, but he can't stand to be a person that hurts someone, or at least a person who's being seen on national television is hurting someone.
Right. So he's sitting there being like, I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. And like, she keeps like being like, okay, bye, leave. And he keeps like coming back. Are you okay? And it's like
get out of here, bro.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing? And he's got, he's got some of that in him. She, you know, there are various people in the lives of both sort of these main characters who occasionally people blow up at them and are like, you suck to be around. And
right. That
feels real and true. And yet at
yes. The
same time, they're also really great. And you could say really the same thing about Randy and Bernie. Like,
yep.
They at times also suck to be around, but they're also really good people. And
although
I think
Bernie, I think, is the least sucky of all of them.
Yeah, I agree.
I love that. That actress is just killing it too. She is so funny.
Yeah, she's great. And like, you know, so many of the supporting characters that kind of come in and come out, you know, maybe they're there for an episode.
Dolliver's just so weird and perfect and real. It's just like the scenes around the LA. I've been at LA apartment complexes like that, where it's a weird scene. Like, that is a thing in L.A. I don't know if people realize that. It's a weird, creepy thing, but that's, like, people hang out like that with their neighbors and stuff. I don't know if they're writing jingles to TV shows, but that is – it just all feels like real L.A. and real relationships.
And there's and a certain kind of L.A. because there's, like, L.A. is a place where – it's a very different life depending on whether you're quote unquote making it or not. You know what I mean? And if you're not making it, like, that's a very different life, you know?
It's hipster waiter trying to be a writer LA. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, or a stuntman or whatever. But like, it's, you know, and I think the show does a great job of showing that. I think it does it does a great job of incorporating different stages of relationship. Like, I like that we're in a place where these two who have felt so troubled and weird, and you don't, you know, you're rooting for it and you don't know, like, now there's a solidity to the relationship, at least in the episodes that that you've seen, and like, that's a nice look for the show too, like, it feels like it's growing with the relationship, you know?
Right. Rich Summer, by the way, with a great little turn again, and it does. It feels like the growth of a relationship. As messed up as it's been at times, like, this is the sort of stuff people do to each other in the world, you know? And it's all just like, it's hard to say if it's acting or writing or directing, but like, everything, even the most unnatural, uncomfortable moments, feel so natural in terms of a realism way.
Yeah. And
I think that's an achievement.
The sum total of the fact, and I think the reason why I saw 7 episodes, and honestly, if it weren't for 2 things, one, just the realization that, you know, when I get to the end of this, there's not going to be any more.
Another year.
No, I think it's done, right?
Oh, is it done?
I think it's done, yeah.
Oh, no.
And then also just the fact that we had a lot of other stuff that we had to watch. Like, I would have plowed through this whole season very easily. Like,
by way of somewhat ham-handed transition, I feel the same way about Sneaky Pete.
Oh, you do? Oh, you know what? Before we touch on Sneaky Pete too, I just wanted to shout out, like, the directors on this season.
By the way, yes, it is the last. Go ahead. It is the last season.
Yeah. Like, there's been kind of a really interesting crew of people directing these shows. Michael Showalter did the 2 episodes that you've seen.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I've only seen Showalter, and he's an old favorite.
He's awesome, and he's so great at that kind of tone.
I mean, think about his stuff, The Big Sick, you know, the Wet Hot stuff, like, even the wackiest things he does has this human quality.
Yeah. Judd Apatow does episode 3. Episode 4 is Alex Karpowski, who was...
From Girls.
Yeah, Ray from Girls, which I think is really cool. Lynn Shelton's a good director that does a few episodes later in the season, so...
You
just tell it's a good crew. And I did not realize that Joe Swanberg directed the last 2 episodes of last season. We're fans of his.
I did, because I rewatched them.
Yeah.
And I've been recommending Easy to everyone I talk to always. So I'm always thinking about Joe Swanberg and waiting for the next Joe Swanberg project.
I have a feeling that I will rewatch the show in its entirety at some point, because it's a very easy one.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. It's one of these shows that I feel like I'll be able to go back to every couple of years and get a real kick out of.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so Love is Great. Let's move on to Sneaky Pete, which we were big fans of on the first season on the show. Also found it to be very bingeable.
Did you watch the little season 1 recap thing on Amazon?
I did, yes.
So they have little – it's like Bryan Cranston interview sort of guides you through season 1.
I didn't watch that. No, I thought you just meant the, like, previously.
Yeah, no, they do a previously on when you click, like, episode 1. But if there's, like, a separate 3-minute video that says season 1 recap that I saw, that I figured meant they didn't have that. So I watched it first, and instead it's like a little promo video where Bryan Cranston talks about it. And one of the things he says is season 2 is, it's like Sneaky Pete and the characters we've developed, it's everything ratchets up to a new level. And episode 2 of season two really jumps the stakes, I would say. Did you get there?
Yes. Yes, I did.
So, for me, a few things are happening, and slight spoilers. I'll try not to spoil too much, but essentially, things seem to have suddenly become a lot more dangerous for almost all the characters on the show, and we're about to get Ethan Embry as, it seems like, a series regular, which I'm very excited about. Additionally, I just don't think there's enough Giovanni Ribisi in the world, man.
I really
like that guy.
You were like, you want more Ribisi.
Not on this show.
Okay.
I'm saying
because he's on it a lot.
No. He's on every frame of the show, basically. No, I mean in the world. Like, what else has he done in the last 5 years? And I really like this guy. He had a moment where he was in, like, all the movies, and that was a good time for me. I really enjoy him, and I find him to be awesome as this character. I just want to watch him.
I think you are more excited about Giovanni, and I would say both these first two episodes than I am. I don't get me wrong, I'm still enjoying the show. So now, because now I put myself in the, like,
curmudgeon
role, because that's not really how I feel. I'm liking it quite a bit. I still want to see where it goes, but I do have some concerns. You know, that with Cranston kind of dropping out, and. Like, I don't know. I don't, like, I'm not as sold. Like, I love season one. I'm not as quite as sold on season two.
To be clear, dropping out as an actor, not as a.
Yeah, he's still involved, obviously. He's doing the recap in season one.
He basically created the show.
Yeah. And look, and I have a lot of faith in Graham Yost, as you know. Now I can say we're both now big Justified fans. And the cast is largely fantastic. I'm not quite as sold on Ribisi's performance as you are.
I just like that guy.
But I enjoy him a lot. And I really, and this is, I think, the hallmark of all Graham Yost series, is like there's such a deep bench of good, interesting, supporting players.
Yeah, the character acting is phenomenal on this show. Margot Martindale is the name I know, but I mean, you recognize just off the top. Well, a Culkin, Rory.
I was going to say, shouts to Rory Culkin, who's doing work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the girl who plays his girlfriend is excellent. And the sister, the whole family. Margot Martindale, her husband, her grandkids, they're all excellent.
Yeah.
And most of them are people that you're like, oh, yeah, that guy or that gal.
Yeah. Peter Gary's great, that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. The bad guy in episode two is one of those guys.
Yeah.
And the daughter, the youngest daughter of the family, who is not someone I've seen before, I think is really excellent.
Yeah. Just so you know, Ribisi's been getting work. He hasn't been starring in a ton of things, but he's been doing 2-3 movies a year.
Like what?
The last few. He was in Ted 2.
Okay. I saw the Ted movies. He is pretty funny in those.
He was in Selma.
Oh.
I forgot he did that terrible TV show with Seth Green on Fox for 2 years. Dads, remember that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Also in A Million Ways to Die in the West, that bad Seth MacFarlane movie. You know.
So obviously he's buddies with Seth MacFarlane, but what else has he done?
You're right. It's mostly been MacFarlane-related.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He hasn't done a lot. And there was a stretch.
He's been hanging out, being Beck's brother-in-law. You know, he's just doing his thing.
Like, look at Boiler Room. The time around Boiler Room, he was blown up.
Yeah. I mean, this guy is one of the stars of the highest-grossing movie of all time.
He is?
I mean, was he not an Avatar? Am I making that up?
I only saw it once in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he was like the bad guy in Avatar, right?
Oh, like, yeah, maybe.
It's kind of a big part.
I don't remember that movie except for Blue Tails. You know
what Isn't
I mean?
It amazing?
You plug your blue tail into something.
It made like $1 billion and we've all just kind of collectively forgot it, right?
He's not in the top five.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird that he's not in the top five. Oh, wait, yeah, he is. If you go to All Cast,
oh, okay,
he's the second name there.
Yeah, Parker Selfridge, corporate administrator for the RDA mining operation.
Right? Do you remember him now?
Not at all.
He
no.
does a lot of Ribisi things.
I'm getting the feeling you're down on Giovanni Ribisi, and I'm just worried about how this affects our friendship.
It's not that I'm like down on him. He's just, he's got a, I mean, I think he's, we can agree, he's got a bit of a shtick, right? He's got a bit of a shtick.
I don't think it's a shtick. I think it's more like,
And he just, he turns it up or turns it down. On Sneaky Pete, it's turned down a lot, which I think is the best Ribisi.
Yeah, agreed. I don't think it's a shtick. I think it's, I think he has some, strong, like, features, character and, not physical features exactly, but like, affects or something that are just who he, you know, he's got a, again, not unlike Paul Rust at times, a weird voice and sort of a weird aesthetic, but I think that's just how he was born. I do think he has a more range than you're giving him credit for.
Perhaps. The other thing I would say from a business standpoint, like Amazon's swinging for the fences on this one, I think. Like they're trying to make Sneaky Pete a thing.
Yeah. No, that's clearly.
I don't know if they're running spots on your radio station, but they're running a ton of spots on my radio station for this show. So,
man, I don't listen to spots on my radio station.
Do you not? I guess you're actually doing stuff during the breaks.
Yeah, I'm not program directing. I don't care about no spots. I do think it's clear that after season one, someone was like, "Let's take this to 11 and see if people care."
Sorry, I was blowing my nose there. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I thought I could get away with it off mic.
Now your health is affecting the podcast.
I know, and we're just at the start of this. I gotta get them coldies. All right, should we move on to network television?
Sure.
Where should we go first? Do you want to talk about Good Girls?
No, let's Pod Chef. Dun, dun, ooh, da, da, da.
Yeah. So season 15 of Top Chef is complete. I don't remember. Do you remember who you predicted would win the show last week?
I want to say I predicted that Joe Flam would win, but I don't. Yeah, I don't honestly remember.
I think I had Adrian, but I don't totally remember.
I think that sounds right to me. I think I win. I don't think we made a bet, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Here's the thing, man. I really think Flam earned it. Like if we just go back hashtag Pod Chef to, sorry, I'm really leaning into this thing. If we go back to when he got eliminated, he was on like a hot streak and just got screwed by an instant quickfire elimination.
Right.
Got like caught off guard. And other than that, I feel like he was routinely in the top three and like to cook through Last Chance Kitchen and whoop all those asses on his way back. Like, I just think this guy was the one. There were flashier and there were people who maybe hit more home runs, but like this guy's OPS is
good.
Led the league.
I think if you're talking about totality of the season, I think Joe Sasto had a better season than Joe Flam. If you're talking about like finishing strong, I think Adrian, that was probably it. But like, I do think that, you know, the like body of work, I don't think you can say it was undeserved. And they've had Kristen Kish won famously through Last Chance Kitchen, and everyone kind of knew she was the best chef on that show that year. So, man, I just spoiled one for you because I forgot you're going back to watch old.
Don't worry. I will smoke weed that right out of my head.
You should definitely watch that season because Kristen Kish is like.
Just don't even stop saying the name and don't tell me what season it is. Getting back to the one season that I've actually watched.
She'll pop on the television screen. That's all I'll say.
That's why I'm saying OPS leader, not the home run leader, not the guy who finished strong, not the guy who like won the World Series, but the OPS leader, because he just, it was doubles in the gap all year long, man. Yeah. And go Joe. I'm a fan of him. I also think he won the room almost every time, every room he was in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, very likable guy. And I'm kind of fired up to go try Spiaggia, although here it's kind of like, I hear it's pricey. But I definitely want to eat there.
That's a fancy one. You're going to have to splurge there. That's not Brown Sugar Kitchen. Anybody with a few bucks and a dream can go to Brown Sugar Kitchen in, I think, Oakland. It might technically be Emeryville.
They say Oakland. I don't know if it actually is.
It's definitely Oakland, whether it is across the Emeryville border or not. And it's in the middle of nowhere, and it's completely reasonable, and it is unbelievably delicious.
Yeah, I gotta try that next time I'm out in the Bay. I have never been to Brown Sugar Kitchen.
Hey man, give me a holler. It's like 5 minutes from my house. Yeah, we'll grab some chicken and waffles.
Do you agree with Adrian? Adrian kind of had a comment, and it, I don't know. This is kind of maybe sound more like shade taken out of context than I think it was during the show. But as she kind of mentioned that, like, Flam wasn't the most adventurous chef, and that she really wanted to go for it with her final dishes. And I feel like there's a little bit something to that. That, you know, that kind of the thing you're talking about. How he's a double sitter. You know what I mean? He's cooking a lot of traditional food and not really.
Yeah, but not he's
showy way.
But he's leading the league in OPS. Who cares?
Yeah,
and the reason you win doing that is because it's not a secret. Adventurous is great, but they talk all season long about how sometimes, in fact, often, it's best to go simple and just hit a home run.
Yeah.
Or you know, hit it into Triple's alley, as it were. Like, this is food. Sometimes we do know what's best already, and it's just about doing the best version. And I you know, I'm all in on Flam. I have a few notes that I want to share.
Okay.
Some favorite things for me about the episode. Did you notice the Planned Parenthood pins?
I did not notice the Planned Parenthood pins.
Shouts to the Top Chef judges, all of whom were wearing Planned Parenthood pins during judges' table. Cool stuff. People may or may not know, my maternal grandmother was a national board member of Planned Parenthood.
I have
a lot of love and respect for that organization.
I follow Chef Colicchio on Twitter, so I'm very aware of his politics. He's pretty active about food issues and some other stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
One particular moment that I especially loved was the tweel when all of the descriptions of the Adrian's tweel as sensual. Like, there was a lot of talk about
sensual tweels. Yeah,
it was really delightful.
And you know what? I don't disagree. It did look kind of sensual.
No.
I would like to make love with that dish to that dish with my mouth.
Yeah, people were like, you part the tweel and you find the delicious broth. It was just like, it was a very, it was a moment that meant a lot.
Yeah, some people part the tweel. Other people just rip it open with their teeth. You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah, there were a lot of different tweel approaches. But I just loved how much discussion it got. And she even made a special phone call to her mentor to get some tweel tips, which was excellent. And then the last thing is, I think it needs to be said once again, and this time with less audio ogling. Padma's, like, style is, like, her whole this woman is not human.
Yeah.
She's some sort of elevated being.
You are not alone in saying that. And in fact, I believe it's been said by contestants. Like, I'd say once a season someone goes, like, Padma's not human, right? Like,
she's
her
an
elevated
style.
Creature of some sort, right?
She is. She's, like, this elegant, beautiful, perfectly styled, wildly intelligent food expert alien. I don't even know. Like, things I don't understand.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Some people are the best of us.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Padma Lakshmi is the best of us.
Yeah. And this, you know, not to just sort of go back to the show overall, but I think, like, now it's sort of a good time to, you know, the season's done. This is part of why, you know, I really wanted you to watch the show and why I really like it, is that I do feel like it's a competition about the best of us. Like, it's really talented people doing these really creative and amazing things and, like, really pushing themselves. And, like, that's what reality TV could and should be. And often, obviously, it falls way, way, way short of that. So,
yeah, man, give me season 16. Let's pod chef it up. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm fired up. And you know, if you feel free to give us some updates if you find yourself watching some old seasons. Because,
yeah, man, the problem is we're really getting into the weeds now with all the television. Stuff's coming back. We got stuff coming back. I mean, we got Netflix and Amazon alone giving me like 5 series I got to get through in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah,
so,
man, it's,
I got work to do.
It's wild. And plus, you know, I still got to find time to watch The Americans, and like Legion's coming back in a couple of weeks.
I'll say again, you really don't.
No, I really do. Especially now. Especially now. I mean, look, you know, I'm at where I'm at. We're in season, you know, this is what, season 6 is coming up. Like, I'm here now. There's like six episodes to the finish line. Like
I don't even want to waste my time watching The Americans. You think I want to waste time counting episodes? Come on.
I can't jump off now. And even though last season, I think by all accounts is kind of like the weakest season. I couldn't be more fired up for the return of The Americans. And I know you don't care, but I am super fired
up. No, that's fine. I want you to have joy in your life.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
All right. So let's talk about Good Girls.
Yes, let's. I think we actually – I'm glad we got through three before discussing it. I feel like I know what this show is now.
Yeah? What do you think it is?
I think it's going to be more or less a networks sort of poor man's Breaking Bad, where Christina Hendricks leads the way into this descent and her younger sister and best friend – sort of push back with varying degrees of intensity as they all head down the road to criminal behavior.
Yeah. I mean, it's network television. It's perfectly fine. It's not going to change the paradigm of network television. And it's not really going to change your life a whole lot. If you're into it, I wouldn't be like, I don't watch that crap. Like, it's perfect. Like, they're, you know, the actors are winning. Shouts to Matthew Lillard, by the way.
What's that?
Shouts to Matthew Lillard, who's pretty much enjoyable in everything. Like, late period Matthew Lillard, I just never would have saw coming.
No, like, after Summer Catch, no one was saying, this guy's going to have a nice little career in his 40s.
Yeah. How about after Scooby-Doo?
Right? Like, that's not where Matthew Lillard was headed. But no, he's really convincing and
weathered
emotional.
Weathered character actor.
Yeah, and Christina Hendricks is always wonderful, and Retta is always a joy to watch, but the revelation here for me is Mae Whitman is winning is the word I would use for her specifically in this role. She is sort of the, I don't know if she's like the emotional heart, but she's some sort of center of this show, some sort of like off kilter center. And that part really works for me. As you said, there's some network stuff. It's not,
I mean, don't you find yourself just wanting to watch all these people in a better show somewhere else?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit. But again, I do think specifically Mae Whitman really carries the day for me. Enough that like I'm at least considering hanging with it for a minute.
Oh wow. Yeah, see I'm out.
I mean, look, it's not like, okay, people ask for show recommendations. This is not one I'm going to start handing out. But it is a show like, you know, putting aside the fact that I probably won't have the time or make the time, like it's something that I would be vaguely interested in to at least like follow Mae Whitman for now and see how this breaks.
How are the ratings? And I ask that not because I think it's important to whether or not to anything really about the show. Other than that, I think it matters in this sense. The dynamics of network television in, you know, the late 20 teens, are such that, you know, shows are getting canceled. Shows get quick hooks. You know what I mean? And I think you have to sort of make that calculation, you know, if you're thinking about, am I going to invest time in this? You know, am I going to wind up watching a show that doesn't get an ending? Or, you know, the ending gets dumped into summertime somewhere on Friday night at 10 o'clock? Or,
I'm looking,
you know, sort of these
something,
things that happen in network shows. You know what I mean?
I'm looking at something right now that has Good Girls right behind Will and Grace. The only other thing ahead of it on NBC was the This Is Us, which of course is murdering ratings.
Yeah.
But it's according to the list I'm looking at, it at least when it debuted was a 1.5, which, you know, beats things like SVU and
network TV,
Chicago Fire, and it beats The Good Place. You know,
it's doing about 5 million viewers per episode, which means it's much more watched than I would say 80 to 90% of the shows that we talk about.
Yeah, so that's not irregular because network TV still does that, but also I think that suggests this is, you know, even as network TV goes, a pretty successful start.
Yeah,
and I do think like, look, our complaint is less a complaint than just we know better, right? It's because you would prefer to watch four more episodes of Love than two episodes of good girls, and I am with you. You know what I mean? Even though I probably like good girls more than you, I'm with you. There's so much more. But, you know, for the 50 to 80% of the country that's either unaware or uninterested in the much more, I think this is a pretty good version of what it is.
The Rotten Tomatoes score for the show is 61% with an average rating of 5.64 out of 10. And I feel like that's a very good summation of this show.
And I feel like that probably reflects, you know, two large groups of reviewers separated by a bit of a distance on their reviews.
Probably.
I think that 61% probably gave it 7 to 8 stars, and then the other 39 gave it 4. Yeah. You know, because that's what it is. It's if you're going to judge it against the Loves and the, you know, just to, the risk, just to make it total, the Wires of the world, it's a 4. If you're going to judge it against
The Good Doctor and
yeah, it's a 7.
Yeah, but maybe you know what? 8. Like, here's the thing: is that we're all fighting against the Loves and the Wires of the world in this sort of infinite TV universe, right? Or whatever your love or your wire is,
I mean,
or whatever.
I'm just embracing it all. I'm not fighting.
So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, there's only so much time in the day. So, like, look, if you want to spend your time on Good Girls, then, like, more power to you. That's cool with me. I don't have any problem with it. I just don't. It seems like you're not trying very hard. if this is in your, like, top 20 shows, you know what I mean?
Try harder, bro, dog. Yeah,
like, I promise you, there's probably better stuff for you out there. If you're too lazy perhaps to find it, like, see, even that's out of judging. I don't mean it that way. Like, if you don't have the inclination to go look for it and this is what you got, like, cool.
Or if this is enough.
Yeah. where this is enough. This is fine. This is fine.
Right. It is. Yeah. It is. It is fun.
All right. I think that wraps up TV for the week for us, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of TV.
There's a lot more coming this week. Sorry, movies.
Yeah.
I won't be hanging out with you for a while.
Are you sure? I feel like there might be a movie or two coming up.
I don't know. There's nothing on my radar at the moment. But if there is, we'll see it.
All right.
Let's jump into.
Oh, I did see A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
How high were you?
Not that high. I did purchase a small edible at the dispensary down the street.
I feel like that's a giant edible occasion if you're going to go see Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, if I'd had too much, I would have just fallen asleep. It was not good.
My favorite thing about Wrinkle in Time so far, and I haven't seen the movie, but my favorite thing about Wrinkle in Time so far are the shots from the set of Mindy Kaling and Reese Witherspoon in costume eating slices of pizza.
Mm-hmm.
I can confirm they're really enjoying the pizza and each other, and it's quite delightful.
I can confirm those stills are better than the film. yes, though, there is a movie coming out that I want to see. I don't know where you are at on Wes Anderson, but Island of the Dogs comes out.
I like Wes Anderson. I'd go see that. I'm probably going to go see Black Panther again at some point just because.
Oh, I've already seen it twice.
Yeah.
I may see it again at the drive-in, but we'll see Isle of Dogs when it comes out. Anyway, enough about TV and movies because it's sports time.
Yeah. So something wild apparently is about to happen. Certainly something of interest for those of you who live here with me.
How many people you got living over there, dude?
I mean, not in my house or anything.
In my city. Sorry. I think
3.5 million people.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. That sounds way too many. I don't think that's accurate, but go on.
No, that's rough. Sounds about right, for at least for the metro area population. That's before you get into...
That's Twin Cities metro.
Yeah. Before you get into, like, the Vikings fans of, you know, surrounding states, of which there are many, yes. Anyway.
By states, do you mean provinces? Go on.
States and some provinces, I think, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of the states that are kind of like provinces. Like,
yeah,
you know,
right. The Dakotas.
Yeah, the Dakotas.
Huh?
You know,
Montana.
Little Iowa. I think there's some Iowa action in there. Yeah.
Nah, you know. Iowa goes Bears.
I think it depends on what part of Iowa you're in. I think if you're in northern Iowa, you're probably Vikings, be my guess.
When they're There's people up there?
Yeah, there's a university in Northern Iowa.
Never heard of it.
Dude, you know, all right, so let's jump into this. The Vikings are apparently about to sign Kirk Cousins.
Wait, before we do that, since you mentioned Northern Iowa, can I just do one thing?
Okay.
Ali Farouk Manesh! That's all.
That's good. I can't believe you pulled that name out. It's so great.
Yeah, it just popped into my head. I had to say it out loud.
So the Vikings are about to sign Kirk Cousins. Key thing is to an ungodly sum of money.
Three years, $84 million. That is 28 per, $500,000 more than the yearly salary of Jimmy the God Garoppolo.
Yeah. Wait, we're calling him Jimmy the God now?
Jimmy Jesus?
Let's just stick with Handsome Jimmy. I feel like Handsome Jimmy is an appropriate nickname for Jimmy. He's handsome, and let's not get carried away.
Jimmy GQ?
Jimmy GQ, I like. Yeah, I like that one. Okay. That's a good one.
Right. Roll with that. I'm a Jimmy Jesus guy myself. The God was just more descriptive than a nickname.
So, yeah, so Kirk Cousins getting all the money. We knew, you know, there are five teams bidding for his services, so that's just going to happen. I'm not going to sit here and do the thing like people did when Matt Stafford became the highest paid player in the league, where it's like, Matt Stafford. It's like, it's situational.
Also, because as you know, by the end of the offseason, he's likely to be the third highest paid player in the league because Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan are probably both getting new contracts.
They're getting new contracts. Drew Brees has a new contract coming.
Yeah, I don't know that he'll get that much.
You know, not a total value, but I could see it on an annual basis.
Maybe.
But regardless, the amount of money is not the important thing here. It's a lot, and it was going to be a lot. What's important is that I think for the first time ever, 100% of the money in this contract is expected to be guaranteed.
It's I don't know that it's technically the first time ever, but in terms of a major free agent deal, it is extremely irregular for an NFL contract to be fully guaranteed. In the other two major sports in this country, it's a stipulation. Basically, that contracts are fully guaranteed. You would have to specifically put in clauses to say otherwise to have non-guaranteed deals for significant signings. So for an NFL deal of any kind to be fully guaranteed, even though I think if we're talking about Kirk Cousins in terms of, you know, his real value or what have you, I think, you know, as a 29-year-old quarterback, tops on the market, he probably could have gotten 6 years if he had taken non-guaranteed money. On the other hand, this means if he plays well, he's going to be a free agent at 32, having just played well, and he's probably going to make even more money. Yeah. So there's no question that signing a guaranteed deal is good for Kirk Cousins. I think the story here is whether this is a movement. And because of the structure of the league, there has to be incentive on both sides for this to happen. You know, not just anyone's going to be able to demand full guarantees. But if more and more major free agents start signing guaranteed deals instead of unguaranteed deals, I think there's a possibility that the league would look at guaranteeing contracts more completely in general to sort of take away a competitive advantage in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question to me. I think it's undeniable that once one person has done it, more people will try to do it. Look, Le'Veon Bell is out there trying to get Adrian Peterson's contract, you know, his mega contract, in an environment where running back value has plummeted rapidly. You know what I mean? Like, people
are
always,
for a guy who's like a consensus best in the league.
Right. People are always going to try to push the best comparison to them forward, right? Like that's gonna happen. And so whoever the big quarterback prize is next year, because we know, like, it's just from a demand standpoint, there aren't enough people in the world who can do this job at a high level.
What about
people
Rodgers?
Will want that guy? Multiple people will want that guy.
What about Rodgers and Ryan right now?
That's what
I mean. Matt Ryan, former league MVP, is 32. He's obviously got three more years. He's probably got four or five good more years. If he says, I'm only signing an extension in Atlanta if I get guaranteed, full guarantees, what choice would the Falcons have?
The only question is whether or not he's going to say it.
Like, that's right.
If he's like, because Matt Ryan is, you know, he is another person that had good timing came in the league when rookie contracts were still extravagant, has been making a ton of money from literally his, you know, day one in the league. You know, if he decides that I don't, you know, I'm rich already, I'm not worried about, this is my last deal and I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I'm set, then fine. But if he says, yeah, I want all the money, they're going to give it to him. They've been clearing cap room to give him a deal already. So,
I mean, that's the thing with the quarterback position in particular. If you got a good one, you just have no choice.
Yeah.
You can't let Matt Ryan go if you're the Falcons. It's not an option.
So, right.
So, if he bends you over a barrel and says, pay me a guaranteed contract, that you're going to do it.
And there are going to be plenty of situations for people where letting go of their quarterback is not an option. You would have thought the Washington Redskins were in that situation. But
I would not. See, I'm with the I am with the Washington team on Cousins. For me, I'll let that guy go before I give him that kind of money guaranteed.
I mean, I guess,
but
like, what
if
is
it's
the
Matt Ryan, if it's Aaron Rodgers, certainly, that's not an option.
What is the franchise number for QB this year?
Well, I think it goes up now, right? Or does it not get affected?
Well, it's
by
the average of the top five, so yeah, I mean it's going to move up slightly, but
I mean it's 20 something.
It's 20 something. I think it's mid
20s.
I think
it was like 21
for Cousins.
Year.
It would have been, if you're the Redskins, it would have been extra high, right? Because that would have been the third consecutive year he was tagged.
That's right.
So, now we're going to get auto. Sorry, we're going to get an autoplay thing happening here. All right, there we go. So
we spent a lot of time.
Ah, damn it, we got it anyway.
Quarterbacks in the league.
I hate the internet.
Having that conversation too.
So, I think that the number that the Redskins would have had to pay annually wouldn't have been that different than if they'd franchised him. And if you're only locked in for 3 years, like he's definitely gonna. Kirk Cousins is gonna be an upgrade over whatever the Redskins wind up doing.
No,
QB, isn't
they already
he?
Did something.
All right, they got Alex Smith. Yeah,
right. I think Alex Smith is better than Kirk Cousins, or at least is good.
Yeah. All right, fair point. I take it back. However, if I'm the Minnesota Vikings, don't you think? And I don't get it. Like, wouldn't you rather tag Case Keenum for 1 year at less money?
That or just roll with Bridgewater and I mean I just. On the other hand,
extend Case Keenum, like, you know, take the tag for 1 year. If he does it again, then sign him to a big extension. Like, I don't get what they're doing at all here.
Alex Smith makes 14.5 base with $17 million cap hit this year. I would take that over Kirk Cousins at $28 million so fast that people would think I was a superhuman.
Yeah, look, I get it's a good situation. I get the Vikings feel like they're one guy away, but I'm not sure that they are better. Like, I think they got about, you know, if you're not going to have a superstar, they had the ceiling for quarterback play last year. You know what I mean? Like the non-superstar ceiling.
Yeah, right? Like that's what I was going to say. The ceiling you would picture for Kirk Cousins is more or less what Case Keenum did last year.
Yeah. I don't
So
So
I
so
know, man, but
sign him, and if it doesn't work out, then you draft a guy. But like,
well, the problem is if it doesn't work out now, you have him for 2 more years at a guaranteed $28 million per, and that's why I would not give this kind of money to someone like Kirk Cousins, who I just don't think will ever be in that top elite group of quarterbacks. And I think anyone who's not in that top elite group of quarterbacks is potentially going to turn into a pumpkin at any time.
Yeah. And look, say what you want about QBR in terms of the quality of a stat, but if you're just looking at it as a thumbnail sketch, Kirk Cousins was 15th in the league in QBR last year.
But I do think we have to admit that when you're a team like the Vikings, who really feels like you're right there, like a couple different throws put you in a Super Bowl, a couple different plays give you a Super Bowl.
Well, hold on a second. They lost the game that got him in the Super Bowl by like 38 points.
I know. I'm just saying that's clearly how they feel.
Right.
And if you feel that, your options of things it is reasonable to do at quarterback, they shrink very quickly because it's just, I mean, in this case, impossible. And in general, very, very difficult to add a NFL proven quarterback who's better than Kirk Cousins, right?
Yeah, clearly. No, it is. But it's they may already have. But when they may have already had one in house, and you're going to guarantee this guy money and pay him even more money than you would have paid the guy you already have, I don't know.
I agree. I'm just trying to see it from their perspective, where they feel like, all right, maybe we just got another Case Keenum. But at least we got him locked in. We don't have to have quarterback drama every year. We're going to be able to develop a system over the next 3 years and worry about all the other pieces that are what got us to the NFC Championship game in the first place.
Look, I mean, I think the case from their point is like they must believe that Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback, right? They've done the scouting.
Or they believe it's better to have that quarterback. Even if they believe he's more or less the same as Case Keenum, they obviously believe it's better to have that quarterback guaranteed for 3 years than to play with the franchise tag. Or maybe they think, who knows?
It's
who really knows? I will say this. I think Kirk Cousins keeps that team in more or less the place they were last year, which is a very good football team with a chance to compete for a title.
Yeah, if things go right. Although
you and I might not have paid Kirk Cousins this way, staying at that level is easier said than done.
Look, I know they lost Dalvin Cook for the year, and that was legitimate. And I know there was a point where people sort of thought their season was lost to injury. Yeah. I would argue they had pretty good health luck for the most part last year.
Pretty much everybody who's going to compete for a title has good health luck.
Right, but that usually doesn't last year to year.
Maybe not, typically. But that's not how you run your team.
All right, so let's and just to back this out 40,000 feet, because we talked about this a little bit. But I believe that within 5 years, we're going to be having a conversation about why aren't all these contracts guaranteed?
I mean, I think we already should be having that conversation. I understand why they're not. It's a dangerous game, and it's a difficult game to evaluate, and
the
business model sort of depends on teams being able to get out from at least from small mistakes that they make with player evaluation.
Do you believe that the cap, if the cap were two times the size of what it is now, that these NFL teams would be profitable still?
Well, that's where I was headed.
Yeah.
Is like, I don't know if it needs to be two times.
I'm just saying, but it could be two times, which means you can raise the cap and then afford to absorb some injury loss. You know what I mean?
That's right. The profit margins are huge. So to at least more fully, if not completely fully, guarantee contracts, of course it should happen. There's no reason. I mean, we can't expect the NFL to be altruistic, but I mean, these guys put their lives on the line. They deserve to have their contracts guaranteed.
Yeah. Do you ever think about how wild it is about how much time we have to spend thinking about contracts and business decisions and salary caps now? Like, I mean, that's half of being an NBA fan.
I mean, it makes this stuff more interesting to me. That I don't get bored by that. So for me, it's all part of it. It's the drama of the NBA.
All right, I think with that, we can transition to homework. I don't know how. I'm going to be watching a ton of NCAA basketball this weekend. There's like 4 days worth of games, so I don't know.
It's going to be tough to work all this today. I mean, it's playing games tonight. It's an exciting time for bad basketball.
Yeah. That's bad, exciting basketball. I'm here for it all day and literally all night. And maybe while I'm supposed to be working.
All night long. All night.
You know what? I feel like.
Are you excited for LIU Brooklyn against Radford tonight or what?
Nah. College basketball traditionalists can be annoying, but I still have a hard time getting down with the first four. Like, I just.
Yeah, I mean, the Bonnies in UCLA could be good, and my understanding is Syracuse, Arizona State should be very good, which is tomorrow. But yeah, watching 2 16 teams play is silly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care how you get there. If you got to add 68 teams or whatever, I don't love it. But whatever, let's all start on Thursday. That's all I'm saying.
No, I'm fine with the playing games. I think they should all be major conference teams. I agree with that too. I think it sucks. If I'm a 16 seed who wins my tournament, I think it sucks that I have to play on a Tuesday and maybe not go to the real NCAA tournament. Like, those are the kids that should get to go, are the ones who play at a small school that, you know, ran their way to a title. Yeah. Like, the fifth team in the ACC can play in a play-in game.
Right.
Let
the NCAA let is essentially saying, we're going to punish you by making you play an extra game because you suck.
Yeah, right? And that sucks for them because, like, Texas Southern, those kids, you know, it could be their one tournament experience.
Right.
It could be – and instead they got to play on a Tuesday? Come on, man. Yeah, or a Wednesday?
Send Texas A&M there. You know, Texas. What did Texas A&M win?
Well, that's the thing is there's plenty of major conference teams who actually had letdown seasons,
right,
who deserve to have to play for their NCAA tournament live.
And I'm not saying that A&M had a letdown season, by the way, or that they're on the bubble. I don't really know. But I do know that they didn't win their conference in any way. So they didn't win jack, right? Like
that's right. So. Any in my mind, any team that wins their conference tournament should play in the 64.
Agreed.
And then the play-ins should be make it for a 10 and an 11 instead of an 11 and a 16. You know, yeah.
In my mind, any team that finishes fourth place in the Ivy League should get an automatic bid. But I may be biased about that. All right, let's do some homework. Can we do that?
Yeah, you'd rather I don't respond to your asinine Cornell comment, is that?
Yes. Yes, I'd rather we moved on. Just rather
all right,
we moved
cool.
on.
Let's just roll on then.
All right, we've got a lot of stuff to cover this week. We were gonna watch Unreal last week, but you didn't do the homework, so
I blew it. And you know what? It's about time. I owe you one or 17.
Cuts like a knife when it happens to you, doesn't it? Yeah. All right, so we're watching Unreal. Shame on me.
We're watching Unreal this week, three episodes of it. I want you to watch Jessica Jones, but I don't know if that's a realistic thing at the moment. Maybe we just keep kicking that can down the road. I don't know. Where are you at on that?
That'll be there for us later, right?
It's on Netflix. It'll be there for us forever,
yeah.
I assume.
Let's go with that.
All right. Well, there's something else on Netflix that I think you will watch. It's called Collateral. It's a four-part miniseries starring Carrie Mulligan, a British television show originally aired on BBC Two last month and coming to Netflix right stinking now.
I've heard it's awesome. Yeah, so I'm fired up.
It's getting a lot of buzz. It looks really good. I'm excited.
Yeah. And then McMafia, which we've talked about a couple times, and we've both
independently made the observation that the star of McMafia, whose name is super normal and I just cannot keep it in
James
my head.
James Norton, is that right?
Sounds right. It's something very normal and British, so James Norton fits. He is a dead ringer for my old Hebrew school classmate, Zach Guilford, of Friday Night Lights fame, who we just got a little taste of in Good Girls.
Yeah. Any Friday Night Lights guy, man.
Friday Night Lights, baby. Matt Saracen. His British counterpart, unfortunately, is booking much bigger roles at the moment.
I actually had like a thought in my head while I was watching it last. I'm like, could they have cast Zach Guilford here? I don't think it would have quite worked. But
I mean, just for a guy I actually know a little bit, I wish they had, because he looks the same. So that part would have been taken care of. I don't know what his British / Russian accent is like, but you know, he's an actor. He could probably figure it out.
Yeah. All right. So we'll watch McMafia and
McMafia. his girlfriend / fiance on the show, whose last name is Rylance, whose first name I forgot, but she's not.
I believe it's Mark. I believe it's actor-winning Oscar winner.
She is not Juliet Rylance. She is not related. Rylance is a stage name. She's not related, or maybe it's a married name. It's not her birth name.
Okay.
Anyway, she's quite good. I enjoyed her very much in The Nick when we watched that a couple years ago. And I enjoy her contributions here. Not sure where I stand on the show yet, but we'll get a couple more episodes in and talk about it next week.
Yeah, fired up for that, and fired up for lots of Clark Kellogg and Seth Davis in our lives.
For four
more days.
Seth Davis, always a blast.
Right, when you think fun, you think Seth Davis.
Yeah.
And a kiss.
That's the wrong.
All right, I'm fired
I do
up.
Enjoy Bill Raftery.
Who doesn't enjoy Bill Raftery? Who does not enjoy Bill Raftery?
Look, the tournament has its charm. I wish they knew how to play basketball. That would make it more charming, but it is what it is.
Would it, though?
We'll enjoy it.
You know what? You're right. Back in the days when they did, it did make it more charming.
It was way better. Like, I still – yeah. Most of the college basketball memories I cherish are at least 10 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, how much of that, though, is not just the quality of basketball, but actually knowing the people involved, right? Because that you spent 4 years with them. Like, a lot of that matters, you know?
Yeah. That's true.
I do think the NBA is going to figure this thing out at some point. So
they're certainly going to try. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. All right. That sounds like a full week. It sounds like we got a full week ahead. I'm looking forward to talking to you soon.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.